Hey, welcome to Politico Tech. Today is Tuesday, June 25th. I'm your host, Stephen Overley. NVIDIA has quickly become one of the world's most valuable companies. In fact, last week, it was briefly the most valuable, beating out Microsoft and Apple for the top spot. NVIDIA's recent success has been fueled by the craze around AI. Tech companies are racing to build the fastest and smartest AI models, and they need microchips to power them. And NVIDIA's microchips are considered the best on the market. But NVIDIA's rise has not been as sudden as it may seem, and it's not guaranteed to last.
They have to recognize all of the issues facing them, all of the challengers facing them, because they are at the top of the world, and everyone wants to dethrone them.
This is Dylan Patel. He runs a market research firm called SemiAnalysis that has tracked NVIDIA for years. I called him up to explain NVIDIA's past, present, and future. Here's our conversation. Dylan, welcome to Politico Tech.
Thank you for having me.
You keep a granular eye on NVIDIA. How would you describe its rise over the past year or so?
It was quite interesting, you know, maybe not even the last year, but the last 2 years, right before ChatGPT released, NVIDIA had a bunch of order cancellations from certain customers, some of their largest customers, and they actually had to take a huge write down of inventory. And then ChatGPT released, and all of a sudden, they had the biggest shortage ever, right? And for the last year and a half, 2 years, they've simply not been able to manufacture enough and sell everything, right? So every order they put in gets sold as soon as they get the chips back. And so it's a stratospheric rise. And now if you look at, like, you know, Jensen Huang, it's quite amazing how quickly, you know, the founder of NVIDIA has become a rock star.
I was going to ask you about this. You know, in some places, this has become a cultural phenomenon. What can you tell me about Jensanity?
I think the number one place that it really crops up is in Taiwan, right? Most recently, there was Computex, which is the biggest computer manufacturing conference in the world. And it's centered in Taiwan, right? And most of the companies that make NVIDIA-based servers, make NVIDIA-based GPUs, are Taiwanese companies. So, and Jensen Huang himself, of course, is born in Taiwan. People all over Taiwan claim anything and everything for him. There's a list of restaurants that passed around on Facebook where he's visited before in like the last like 3 years. And every single one of them, there's a line 30 minutes before the place opens, right? And a lot of these places are just normal, like, you know, mom and pop restaurants. So, you know, it's incredible, like, how much of a phenomenon he is there. Now, of course, in the US, right, you have all these companies begging for him to come to their conference and speak there. And so many software companies that maybe aren't, you know, directly attached to AI, although they want to be, are just want him there so badly. So it's the Jensanity going on is amazing.
Yeah, it's pretty stunning. And I mean, one question I have is, has this been a long time coming? Because NVIDIA has been around since 1993, which I don't know that some people will realize. They probably think this company is brand new because they just hadn't heard of it before 2 years ago. But it hasn't always had the success it's having now.
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, NVIDIA was going to go bankrupt because their first two chips failed until Jensen got the head of Sega. Sega, if you recall, made, you know, consoles in the past, like the Dreamcast, and Sonic is from Sega, right?
Right.
You know, Sega had to give NVIDIA a prepayment for upcoming chips just so that they could get their third trip across the line, which finally was successful. And then, you know, I wouldn't say the rest is history because there were still many ups and downs for NVIDIA, right? They dominated in gaming. But then NVIDIA in 2010-ish released their software framework for, you know, doing parallel processing of fluid simulations and physics simulations and eventually AI. And then they were making some money, but they weren't, like, you know, raking in the dough like they are today. But even then, it wasn't like, oh my gosh, this is deserves to be a $1 trillion company or, you know, even a top 10 company in the world until, you know, I guess the latest craze of ChatGPT and everyone racing to build something similar and better.
And so does that mean the success NVIDIA has seen should be sustainable in your view? I guess anytime I think of like some hot new technology or really any new trend, the question I sort of immediately have is this going to flame out?
So I think this takes a bit of, I want to say almost religious conviction. The religious conviction here is, what did they do when they made ChatGPT, right? OpenAI, this relatively unheard of startup, you know, raised money and basically spent $500 million on making GPT-4, right? No one had ever tried to make an AI model that large, but no one believed in it. And then it came out and everyone was like, wow. And OpenAI raised, you know, over $10 billion, most of it coming again from Microsoft, right? Right. Now the question is, what if I spend $10 billion on a model, right?
Yeah.
What if I go from training on tens of thousands of GPUs to hundreds of thousands of GPUs? And also those GPUs are faster, right? So the belief or the religious conviction that many in Silicon Valley have sort of succumbed to, right? As well as, you know, major companies outside of Silicon Valley as well, but really the Silicon Valley companies, they've succumbed to this, hey, if we throw 100x more resources at this, are we going to make something that's not just like really, really nice chatbot, but something that can just completely automate a lot of tasks, right? And that's the religious conviction here. Now, if this $10 billion that OpenAI raised, and obviously Meta and Amazon and Google and Anthropic, all these companies are also chasing spending this same amount. But the $10 billion that Microsoft gave OpenAI, if that doesn't result in something significantly better, then this fizzles out, of course.
I wonder with NVIDIA if you think, you know, they're sort of worshiping a false idol in any way, or is this company all the hype and all the excitement that it's made out to be? You know, it's high-end chips and its sort of ownership of that market is really what makes it stand out. But there's other competitors in that space too.
Yeah, so there are competitors, but no one else has been able to create something as performant, as powerful, and have software that works alongside it, right? Mm. So there is a humongous difference in what NVIDIA has been able to do and what any other competitor has been able to. Now, the scary thing, in fact, is that the largest companies in the world, right? Microsoft, Meta, Google, Amazon, all of them are working on their own AI chips, and they didn't start working on their own AI chips when ChatGPT got released, right?
Right.
Google's AI chips started working on it in 2013 or 2014, right? So the others, you know, in the late 2010s, everyone has been working on these AI chips. The question is when or if they'll be able to beat NVIDIA. And then there's other companies like AMD and others, right, in the semiconductor space, traditional, that are trying to fight with NVIDIA. The question is, will others be able to dethrone NVIDIA on performance, on power, on software? Because today, NVIDIA is leaps and bounds ahead of everyone else in terms of efficiency, performance, and the software required to run these AI models and make them. So NVIDIA has to out-innovate everyone.
You know, with all of its market power, it has attracted or started to attract some scrutiny. You know, for example, my colleague Josh Sisko recently reported about the Justice Department being poised to investigate NVIDIA for anti-competitive conduct. And it's not clear that there's an actual investigation yet, but I wonder how you interpret that and how we should think about kind of the challenges that may pose to NVIDIA.
So NVIDIA is quite visionary in the sense that they've always been extremely, extremely aggressive, right? Whether it be ordering a ton of chips, and they've done this multiple times before they knew the demand was there. And so the question is, did NVIDIA do anything anti-competitive by investing in this software that no one believed in over a decade ago, right? And then making it exclusive to their own hardware? That's the question, right? And I think most think, no, that's not really anti-competitive, right? You've been investing in what they call CUDA for over a decade. And people thought, the market literally thought they were dumb, right? You can go back and listen to earnings calls, transcripts, where some of these bankers were saying, you know, like, why are you investing in this, right? Back then. And so NVIDIA had this incredible conviction and invested in the software, and it finally paid out. Right.
Right.
And so is that anti-competitive that they don't like all of a sudden allow other companies to use the software that they've been investing in for decades? Right. It's not like Google allows other people to use their search software. Right. They'll serve you search, but they're not going to let you use it without being paid for it. Meta doesn't let you use their social media algorithm that gets everyone hooked to the phone. Right. Like, it's the competitive advantage.
Got it. So it sounds like you don't see necessarily a whole lot of reason to worry then about some of the attention that it's getting from regulators.
There's some things there, right? So for example, NVIDIA doesn't make just AI processor, right? They don't just make the software either, right? They also make networking hardware. Mm. And then the question is like, hey, Microsoft, you buy the networking hardware, although you didn't used to buy NVIDIA's networking hardware, but you're buying the networking hardware. And it turns out NVIDIA is letting them buy, in the time of shortage, more GPUs than anyone else, right? Is that a coincidence or not? Meanwhile, Amazon, during the shortage, they were not allowed to buy that many GPUs. Why? Because they didn't use any of NVIDIA's networking hardware. Now, is that like, is that anti-competitive? Is like bundling, you know, there's cases about this, but I'm not a lawyer, right? Like, you know, there's cases about bundling being illegal. So this is an area where maybe something could be true, right? Because it's not clear that NVIDIA has the best networking hardware. They have some of the best networking hardware, but not necessarily the best. But if you give preferential treatment to the person who's buying your AI chips and your networking hardware over the person who's just buying your AI chips and then buying, you know, networking hardware from, say, Broadcom, then maybe there's something there.
You know, I talk to a lot of folks who exist in a Washington bubble, admittedly, and so they see the world through kind of a lens of politics and policy. I wonder, as someone who doesn't look at the world just that way, where do you put kind of geopolitics and policy among the risks facing NVIDIA?
And the question is, can China build their own AI chips? And they're working on it. Huawei specifically is working really hard. If you believe in like the sort of AI religion, as I sort of described earlier, then you know, there's plenty of people in China who also believe that religion, just like there's plenty of people all over the world who believe sort of that AI will be better and automate more, et cetera, right? So if you believe that, then, you know, it's pretty life or death. And that's what Huawei sort of treats it as, right? And the national government of China. So they're investing humongously to try and catch up as well. The other geopolitical thing that I would mention is that countries all around the world view AI as a geopolitical thing, right? You know, the sort of obsession with chips being geopolitical was, you know, because of the chip shortage, did lead to over $100 billion being invested in by, you know, various governments across the world, right? The US, Europe, Japan, Taiwan, South Korea, China, India, all these countries have plowed money into the chip industry. And now AI seems to be even bigger risk. So there's a lot of money being poured in, not just from those countries, but also from, you know, Malaysia and Indonesia and Singapore, and so many countries are plowing money into building their own AI infrastructure. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean their own AI chips, right?
Sure.
But that is fueling a lot of this as well, right? Companies that don't even know how to make AI or deploy AI are now racing to do it. So that's also a big geopolitical thing because governments are encouraging it. They're like, hey, we can't be caught flat-footed here.
Right. They're incentivizing it in many cases in a very big way. Well, I guess one last question for you here, Dylan, and that's, we started kind of talking about the story of NVIDIA, this company that struggled and then has had this recent rapid rise. I'm curious, from your view, what will make the difference between this being a success story or a cautionary tale in the long run?
So the real difference here, I think, would be how NVIDIA executes, right? They can't get high on their own, NVIDIA can't be so excited.
High on their own chip supply.
Yeah, high on their own chip supply. That's a good one. There we go. They can't be high on their own chip supply and like sit flat-footed. They have to recognize all of the issues facing them, all of the challengers facing them, because they are at the top of the world and everyone wants to dethrone them. And they can't force people into just buying, you know, their AI chips or force them into buying their networking chips. But they're now trying to sell entire racks of servers. They're trying to bundle in software, right? They keep trying to move up the value chain, which is a good idea, obviously, from a business perspective. They can't just sell chips while also making sure that their biggest customers don't like kick them out completely.
Listen, Dylan, super helpful and interesting. I appreciate you being here on Politico Tech.
Thank you so much for having me, Stephen.
That's all for today's Politico Tech. For more tech news, subscribe to our newsletters, Digital Future Daily and Morning Tech. Today's episode was produced by Afra Abdullah. I'm Stephen Overly. See you back here tomorrow.